Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopijana Balaba Kiribada Tagode. Balaba Kiribada Tagode. Yasodhanandana Prajnana Ranjana Yasodhanandana Prajnana Ranjana Yukuna Te Radhavana Chalare Te Ravana Chahare Jai Muradam Bhagubha Kunja Vihare Jai Muradam Bhagubha Kunja Vihare Nati Jana Pallava Giribadurare Jana Balaba Kiribadare Yasunandana Vrajana Vrajana Yasunandana Vrajana Vrajana Te Ravana Chari Yamuna Te Ravana Chari Jayo Radha Madhuva Kunda Vihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Acharya Also Tera Satyashi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Chananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami
Shila Prabhupada
Istan founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Anantakoti, Vaishnav Vrinda ki jai, Namacharya, Srila Huidas Thakur ki jai, Paren se kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha, Shri Vasudeva Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopagopada Sayam Kun Radha Kunda, Kiri Govardhan ki jai, Vrindavanam ki jai, Maturam ki jai, Jagannathaswami ki jai, Yamunamai ki jai, Srimati Lasadevi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Vrindananda Hare Hare Gaur. All glorious he assembled devotees, all glorious he assembled devotees, all glorious he assembled devotees, all glorious to Shri Guru Gauranga. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So today is the commemoration of the first day of the swing vessel, Julian Yatra. And so I thought what we do today is read the description of the swing festival from Kavi Karnapura's Ananda Vrindavan Champu. It's actually the last chapter in the Ananda Vrindavan Champu. And it's a little lengthy, so we may not get a chance to go on to Bhagavatam today, but I think it's important for us to understand the history and the details of the swing festival as it took place in Vrindavan over 5,000 years ago. So, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Shh, shh. So, Om Aganat, Timidandasha, Gananjana, Shilakaya, Chakshur, and Meditam, Yenatas, Maheshi, Gurveda, Maha. So, this is chapter 22 of the Ananda Vrindavan Champu. On another day, Krishna performed the swing festival, Julan Yatra, which is the perfect object of meditation for those desiring a taste of devotion. And that day, the sweet pastimes of Radha and Krishna far surpassed the sporting of the demigods and their wives in the celestial gardens. This chapter describes Krishna's ecstatic swing festival, which is incomprehensible to the three worlds. The swing festival was held in a special place in Vrindavana, which was bordered by a line of desire trees of equal height, with round trunks and branches whose ends intertwined, leaving a bare space in the middle. The line of trees appeared like a wall of sapphire jewels. Besides the birds inhabiting those trees, the presiding deities of the forest had placed various items in the trees, including chamaras, silk cloth, long strands of pearls, jewels, fruits, and flowers. A square-shaped golden stage stood in the center of the decorated trees. In the middle of the stage was a jeweled kunja with four doors. Four Harichandana trees stood as pillars in the corners of the kunja. The intertwining of the trees' upper branches formed an overhead canopy. The swing hung on thin golden ropes tied to the branches of the Harichandana trees. This arena appeared in the center. Every gopi group leader had a personal kunja with a swing in the four directions radiating from this central arena. So there were many, many swings, of course. The other arenas lined with, because Krishna divided himself, obviously. The other arenas lined with pleasant Deva Turu trees radiated green all around and resonated with the singing of young cooing birds. They served as embodiments of festivity for the entire earth. One swing hung from each pair of trees, and sitting platforms for the gopis encircled the bases of these trees. Golden chains tied securely to the branches of the trees hung down in straight lines. In the center arena, four lines of swings belonging to different group leaders faced the four doors of the main kunja. Herds of deer frolicked about joyfully in the flat, open land surrounding the kunjas. The hearts of everyone immediately flooded with joy just by seeing these areas, which were illuminated by Chintamani gems and by trees as brilliant as coral. The top branches of the trees formed a joint to form a natural, pleasing green canopy. Gazing upwards forever, one could not find the tops of those tall trees. The moonlight, filtering through the canopies of the trees, made small filaments of light on the forest floor that looked like piles of sesame and rice. Thinking of food, the female deer tried to lick it. The four kunja mandaps, that is, raised platforms, were so similar that even the devatas could distinguish them only by their placement in different directions. In those areas, the Vana Devis, that means the forest ladies, had stretched a canopy in preparation for the swing festival. The scattered moonlight appeared like pearl belts taken from the deities of the directions, broken by the steady wind, and broadcast on the earth out of respect for the land of Vrindavan. It appeared as if all the stars in the sky in great bliss left their positions to come to offer respects to the land of Vrindavan.
Pieces of rustling silk cloth from the goddesses of the sky formed the rooftops of the kunjas and hung down, quivering like tongues trying to lick the dust of Vrindavan. The nets of pearls hanging from that cloth were swinging gently in the soft breeze and pleasantly resounding like tinkling ankle bells. The forest gods had decorated the canopies with strings of various kinds of fruit and with scented chamaras resembling white lotuses born from the sky, or swans flying up from the lake of moonlight. The swing arena, carried the celestial scent of aromatic aguru fumes, drops of perfume squeezed from the kalpa druma trees, and piles of camphor dust, which made lines of white smoke in the sky, impatient and anxious to begin the swing festival. The devatas and their wives, the siddhas, vidyadharas, charanas, and kinnaras, played their instruments as they arrived in Vrindavan in their innumerable celestial airplanes. Amazing scenario. In a jubilant mood, the gentle goddesses from different forests, carrying various festival ingredients in their hands, assembled in Vrindavan. With friendship, kindness, and all good qualities, they finished decorating the swing arena and built an impressive entrance with the best garlands. From all directions, flocks of joyful birds came fluttering to broadcast the sweetness of the swing festival. They perched peacefully on the twigs and branches of the trees, hung around the arena, eager to see the wonderful swing festival. The birds sang the glories of Krishna while their own hearts swung in delight. Forgetting all troubles and impelled by curiosity, varieties of deer gathered in the kunjas. They stood as motionless as figures in a painting, appearing as if they had not been attracted to the forest by the sound of Krishna's flute, had not abandoned their household duties, and not opposed their elders, the doe-eyed gopis, like touchstones for pleasurable pastimes, suddenly manifest out of nowhere, as if coming directly from the desire trees. Colored with kumkuma, their loins glistened ready for dancing. They wore fluffy petticoats covered by fine silk dresses extending to their ankles. Glittering bodices beautified their breasts. Their effulgent bodies were adorned with festive colored sashes and tinkling waist bells. The soft round shoulders of the gopis rivaled the flower bow of Cupid. The gopis had tucked flower arrows in their girdles and held flower bombs in their hands. In the arena of artful, amusing swing pastimes, the blissful gopis appeared like the incarnation of Rati, that is the goddess overseeing festive love battles. Some gopis had flower pollen sachets hidden in their golden waist belts. And of course, that's for throwing flowers. Bags of pollen seemed like the accumulated wealth of their skill in lovemaking collected over a long period of time for purchasing the jewel of Krishna's mind. Some gopis held thousands of flasks filled with fragrant aguru, musk, camphor, and sandalwood ointments. These thin, delicate flasks would break open with a breath. Others carried ingeniously designed syringes filled with flower essences, kumkum water, sandal water, and musk water. The gopis looked like well-armed soldiers, ready for the battle of love, anxiously awaiting the arrival of Radhika Shyam to start the festival. Each of the gopis, the jewels among women who are more beautiful than the soldiers of Cupid, thought that she would swing first. The gopis entered the four areas around the main arena while discussing this amongst themselves. Out of excitement, they made a din with their loud laughing that resembled the sweet cooing of the cuckoos. Krishna entered the swing arena with his left arm resting on Radha's shoulder, holding his flute. In his right hand, Krishna twirled a lotus flower while his bangles chimed happily. A pleasing peacock feather topped his reddish turban that tilted attractively to one side. Krishna's elegant earrings and ear lotuses swung in the breeze created by the bees circling his head. fine cloth kissed his limbs, lit by the jewels of his crown and bracelets. Krishna shone attractively with his pearl necklaces, tinged red from the rays of the Kastuba jewel. Light, delicate footsteps accented his graceful yet playful gait. Jeweled anklets and bells adorned his lotus feet. Krishna, his splendid lips shining, appeared somewhat drowsy from chewing betel nut. Yet his effulgence easily defeated the combined radiance of all the jewels adorning the ladies in heaven. Krishna's effulgence took the shape of a jeweled mace to announce his entrance into the bower of jeweled trees. As Krishna and his servants ascended the dais surrounding the east wing, the birds screeched, "Victory! Victory!" The trees and creepers felt such rapture that their limbs erupted with tiny bumps, and honey streamed down like a torrent of tears. When the peacocks stared at Radha and Krishna, they thought they were seeing dark rain clouds, flashing lightning. Though knowing Radha and Krishna from before due to their unprecedented love, the peacocks madly cried out, "Coo! Coo!" It's pretty good. Who are those two persons? Kail means, who are those persons, basically?
Kail.
Interesting. That's what it means, the sound of the peacocks. Who are they? Who are they? Different celestial denizens joined Krishna and the gopis to celebrate their Julan Yagleela. In attendance, there were charming charanas, male and female kimpurushas, and the wives of the siddhas beating expertly on mandala and pandava drums with their delicate hands, the spotless heavenly damsels from Swarga, and the apsaras directed by Urvasi, so Urvasi was there, held chamaras as radiant as waves in the Mandakini River. They showered fragrant flowers from the Nandanakana gardens, which glittered like stars as though they fell from the sky. In this atmosphere, Krishna mounted the attractive, comfortable seat of the swing. Krishna looked like a regal crest jewel sitting on the cotton seat. The cloth covering the seat was whiter than the foam that appeared during the churning of the milk ocean. Shining pillows also adorned the beautiful seat. Seeing that amazingly wonderful swing purified the vision and empowered the eyes to see other objects in a fresher way while the devatas played sweet music. Mukunda and Radha marveled at the intricate workmanship of the jeweled lamps illuminating the swing. Trembling out of ecstatic love, Radhika and her friends sat beside Krishna, who rested his left arm on Radha's shoulder. When the Lord ascended the exquisite swing and displayed his sweet beauty, which defeated the fickle currents of a river of nectarian beauty, the devatas and their wives lost all composure. As the ardent desire of the devatas' hearts to get a closer view of the divine couple moved out of their hearts to express itself, it choked their throats. With that hope, they left the middle sky and descended to a more favorable lower borders of the sky. When lotus-eyed Chandravali and the other group leaders beheld the especially intimate feature of Krishna sitting upon the swing, their eyes sparkled with blissful love. The gopis, adorned with colorful makeup and tinkling belts, mounted the respective swings and loudly sang sweet songs in their appropriate tempo. Chandravali and her group sat facing Murari, Bhadra, and her associates sat on her right, Shama and her followers on the left, and Dunya and her assistants sat behind Murari. Crowding the four outer yards, other joy-filled gopis sang melodious songs with the finest artistic skill. Their effulgent complexions conquered a garden of golden creepers. As they softly vibrated their seven-stringed veenas, the gopis produced pleasing ambrosial music of unequaled excellence. Holding on with one hand and swinging their bodies, the gopis moved gaily on the swings as swarms of bees followed them. With their free hands, the gopis took fistfuls of powder from the bags tucked in their belts and forcefully threw it in the air while their bangles jingled along. Scattered here and there by the wind, the colored powders appeared or spread a red hue throughout the sky, like a screen of fresh Java flowers. The devatas, anguished by this obstruction to seeing Krishna's pastimes, repeatedly showered flowers to remove the recurring screen of dust. It appeared that clouds dripped flower nectar. As the Manjaris gracefully pushed the swings, Brinda and the others shouted, "Jai Ho! Jai Ho!" While blissfully absorbed in swinging, Radha and Krishna hurled colored powders on the gopis. When Chandravali and the other Sakis returned the volley with their powders, Radha and Krishna revealed a unique state of fresh beauty. As the powders thrown at Krishna blew away in the wind, the gopis filled their reddened hands with sandalwood powder and other fragrances to bomb Krishna again. Radha's friends, who were expert in shooting pitchkaris full of sweet-smelling colored water. That's like a syringe, pitchkari. You have them in India. Assembled around the swing of Radha and Krishna. Suddenly, Chandravali and her sakis attacked Radha and Krishna with pitchkaris full of color. With their jeweled pitchkaris loaded with scents and glittering like the moon, Radhika's sakis counterattacked Chandravali and her group with a fountain spray of color. Aimed mainly at Chandravali, that spray of liquid scent did not even once touch the bodies of Radha and Krishna. Gathering their forces, Radha's sakis, who were eager to win the battle, shouted, "I am winning! I am winning!" In the pandemonium. It's interesting how they have these fights, isn't it? These play fights. They're really enjoying. In the pandemonium, a few more gopis picked up pitchkaris and wildly squirted other gopis. In the excitement to win, some bottles of liquid fell and broke, releasing thick streams of agaru and sandalwood-scented liquid over the ground. When the flower bombs being forcefully thrown from all directions came too close to the son of the king of Vrindavan, the gopis deflected them. If, however, any bomb happened to hit the dark blue body of Krishna, Radhika happily wiped it off with her soft hand moistened from perspiration. Feeling disturbed, Krishna lost his composure upon seeing the condition of the gopis. He was afflicted with pride and apprehension. To increase the pleasure of the doe-eyed gopis who gazed at him with shy, downcast eyes like Jakoris agitated by the moon, Krishna abandoned all formal rules of conduct and followed the whims of Cupid. Witty, humorous, and controlled by his consorts, the brother of Balaram, rolling his eyes in desire, challenged the groups of gopis facing him on all sides, eager to play holy with him. So there was a combined holy festival at the same time. Skillful at sport, Hari smashed the gopis in the southern direction with a deluge of colors. While moving on their swings and firing red powder at Krishna, the beautiful gopis appeared as victory flags of cleverness. Then, Krishna subdued the playful, blissful girls on the northern side. Next, he defeated the gopis and their associates in the western direction, who kept swinging the whole time while strongly desiring pastimes of enjoyment. Their eyes and bodies defeated the beauty of lakes full of lotus flowers. Then he conquered the elegant, excited women on the eastern side who were particularly attractive, being seated on swings directly opposite him. While swinging and throwing ruby-red powder with his lotus hands, Krishna shared a seat with Radhika, who possesses the limit of excellent qualities. After winning the battle of Holi, Krishna smiled brilliantly, desired to please the different groups of swinging gopis. Starting in the eastern direction, he faced each group and dexterously moved his swing in two different directions. When Krishna swung east or west, he moved the swing directly towards the gopis in those directions. When he swung to the north or south, these gopis sat next to him in the joy of such counter-swinging. Krishna's necklaces, forest garland, and shiny earrings all joined in the festival. Sri Krishna enacts two types of eternal pastimes, manifest and unmanifest. With the description of Radha and Krishna's swing festival, I, Kavi Karnapur, the crest jewel of Rasikas, conclude the book entitled Ananda Vrindavan Champu, which parallels the Vrindavan pastimes of the Lord described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay? So that's the Swing Festival. I guess we have time to go on to Srimad Bhagavatam. We have just 15 minutes. Okay. So read it from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th Canto, 1st Chapter, Text 2. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Yadosh cha dharma shilasya vidaram muni satama tatram shena vittirnasya vishnor viryani shamsa naha Yadoscha Dharma Shilasya
Yadoscha Dharma Shilasya
Nidharam Muni Satyama
Nidharam Muni Satyama
Tatram Shena Vatirnasya Vishnor Viryani Shamsana
Vishnor Viryani Shamsana
Yadoscha Dharma Shilasya
Yadoscha Dharma Shilasya
Nidharam Muni Satyama
Nidharam Muni Satyama
Shena Vatirnasya Vishnor Viryani Samsana Yarascha Dharma Shilasya Nitaram Munisatama Utam Shena Vatirnasya Vishnor Viryani Samsana. Yadaho of Yadu or the Yadu dynasty. Cha also. Dharma Shilasya. We're strictly attached to religious principles. Nidharam. Highly qualified. Muni Saptama. Best of all Munis. King of the Munis, Shukadev Goswami. Tatra, in that dynasty. Amshena, with his plenary expansion, Baladeva. Avatirnasha, who appeared as an incarnation. Avishnoho, of Lord Vishnu. Viryani, the glorious activities. Shamsa, kindly describe. Naha, unto us. Translation of Esther, the Munis, you have described the descendants of Yadu, who are very pious and strictly adherent to religious principles. Now, if you will, kindly describe the wonderful, glorious activities of Lord Vishnu or Krishna, who appeared in that Yadu dynasty with Baladev, his plenary expansion. So just go on. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Brahma Sanhita, 5th chapter, text 1, explains that Krishna is the origin of Vishnu Tattva. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchananda Vigraha Anadiyo Adiyo Govinda Sarvakarana Karana. Krishna was known as Govinda, as the supreme controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for he is the prime cause of all causes. Yashaika Nishvasitikalamattalam Avalambya Jivantiloma Vilaja Jagadandanata Vishnur Mahansahya Yasha Kala Vishesho Govinda Maripurisham Tamaham Bhajami. The Brahmas, the heads of innumerable universes, live only for the duration of one breath of Mahavishnu. I worship Govinda, the original Lord, of whom Mahavishnu is but a portion of a plenary portion. Brahma Samhita, 5th chapter, text 48. Govinda, Krishna, is the original personality of Godhead. Krishna is too Bhagavan Swayam, even Lord Mahavishnu, who by his breathing creates many millions upon millions of universes, is Lord Krishna's Kala Vishesha, or plenary portion of a plenary portion. Mahavishnu is a plenary portion, a plenary expansion of Sankarshan, who is a plenary expansion of Narayana. Narayana is a plenary expansion of the Chaturvyuha, and the Chaturvyuha are plenary expansions of Baladev, the first manifestation of Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna appeared with Baladev, all the Vishnu Tattvas appeared with him. Maharaj Parikshit requested Shukadev Goswami to describe Krishna and his glorious activities. Another meaning may be derived from this verse as follows. Although Shukadev Goswami was the greatest Muni, he could describe Krishna only partially, Amshena, for no one can describe Krishna fully. It is said that Adanta Dev has thousands of heads, but although he tries to describe Krishna with thousands of tongues, his descriptions are still incomplete. So Om Gana Tibhananda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshura Meditam Yena Tosmai Shigare Maha. So here in the purport, Prabhupada actually summarizing the commentaries of the Acharyas, explains Krishna's position as the source of all the incarnations. One thing I want to talk about here is how it's described in this verse that Krishna is a descendant of Yadu. He's a member of the Yadu dynasty. And in the Bhagavatam, in Queen Kunti's prayers, Queen Kunti asks, Krishna, have you descended just to glorify Yadu? It's an interesting prayer. I think it's the last prayer in the chapter, that the Lord has appeared just to glorify Yadu. And in this regard, I wanted to talk about, in the beginning of the 10th canto, the whole dynasty in which Krishna appeared. I have this interesting chart here of all the dynasties in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'd like to explain, actually, the dynasty in Krishna, which Krishna appeared in. So once upon a time, Lord Mahavishnu created all the universe. In each and every universe, you had the Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And Garbhadakshay Vishnu gave birth to who? Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma gave birth to several people, you know, Swayambhuva Manu, Marichi, Atri, and other sages. But in this particular case, we'll talk about Atri. Atri gave birth to Soma. Soma gave birth to Buddha. Not the Buddha, Lord Buddha. And Buddha gave birth to Pururava. Isn't that interesting story? You remember in the Bhagavatam, Pururava and Urvasi? So Pururava and Urvasi, they had actually 6 sons. And amongst those sons, there was someone named Nahusha. Remember Nahusha from the Bhagavatam? Nahusha actually got in trouble with Indra's wife. I'm not going to tell that story. Nahusha gave birth to 6 children. And 6 children, amongst those 6 children, there was Yayati. Remember Yayati? Yati and Devyani, Sarmishta, that whole story in the Bhagavatam. I just remind you of the stories we've read previously in the Bhagavatam. And of course, Yayati, he had a trouble because he got old prematurely because Devyani's father, Shukracharya, got really angry at him because he was hanging out with Sarmishta. And so he wanted to get back his youth. And so what happened is that his sons basically didn't want anything to do with it, giving his youth back, except for Puru. This is an interesting story, Puru. We're not going to talk about it. Yeah, actually, the Puru dynasty includes the Pandavas. So actually, the Pandavas are connected to Krishna. And the Pandavas also are descendants in the original, chain that we're describing here. So anyway, so another son of Yati was named Yadu, who was the founder of the Yadu dynasty, and Yadu refused to give his youth to his father Yati. The reason he refused to give his youth to his father Yati was that he wanted, first of all, he gave the excuse that he wanted to become renounced and be young first and be able to renounce as far as possible so that the Lord would appear quicker in his dynasty. Got 5 more minutes. And then from Yadu, Yadu had a son, he had several sons, named Kroshta. Kroshta had many descendants, and finally there was someone named Satvata, because the Yadu dynasty is sometimes called the Satvata dynasty too. And then Satvata had several different sons, but 2 sons are actually very important. One was Vrishni, and the other one was Andaka. So you have the Vrishni dynasty and the Andaka dynasty there too. And from the Andaka dynasty, I'm not going to give all the people in that dynasty, eventually you have Devaki being born in the Andaka dynasty. So you actually see the Vasudeva and Devaki came from the same dynasty, the Satvata dynasty. Sorry, Satvaka. And from the Vishnu dynasty, you have, or ultimately, Surasena. And Surasena gave birth to Vasudev, I have to pronounce it properly, who was the father of Lord Krishna. And Surasena also gave birth to Kunti, who was the mother of the Pandavas. So you see, the Pandavas are related to Krishna in 2 different ways, which is interesting. Because the Pandavas are actually... Anyway, yeah, descendants of the Puru dynasty, because ultimately in the Puru dynasty, Shantanu, Vichitravirya, Bhishma, Chandrangada, Pandu, Dhritarashtra, and Vidura. Is everybody following this so far? So you have the Puru dynasty. So Krishna's related, because the Puru dynasty occurred after Yati at the same time Yadu was there. So there's everybody is related somehow or other in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is quite interesting, all these different dynasties. So anyway, so Surasena was the father of Vasudeva and Kunti. And Kunti, of course, is married to Pandu. Kunti was the mother of all the Pandavas. And Vasudeva is the father of Lord Krishna, as well as Subhadra, Lord Balaram, and there were other sons too. Anyway, so this is the dynasty. This is the Yadu dynasty we're going to be talking about. This Yadu dynasty ultimately descends from the moon, Soma. So ultimately descends from the moon, and as Prabhupada comments and the Acharyas comment, generally the Lord appears in 1 of 2 dynasties, that is the moon dynasty or the sun dynasty. Lord Ramachandra appeared in the sun dynasty. And Krishna appear in the moon dynasty. So, any questions or comments? We got about.
There's something significant to that Mahavishnu is called Kala Vishesh, which means he's in time.
In time, yeah.
So, Krishna's got nothing to do with.
Krishna has nothing to do with time.
Time.
Yeah, he's beyond time. Like, because Mahavishnu is lying down in the causal ocean. The causal ocean actually means, like, in the material world where you have time, everything has a cause and effect. And Krishna is called what? Sarva Karna Karna in the first verse of the Brahma Samhita. So Krishna is beyond, you know, this Karna, Karnajale, you know, which is another name of the causal ocean.
Okay.
the ocean of cause, you know, anyway, the ocean of cause. Yeah, Krishna is beyond time, and time begins with the causal ocean. Pretty good. But time is always there. It's eternal. It's not one of the things that's destroyed. It's one of the topics of Bhagavad Gita, time. And time, Krishna says also, Kalo Asmi, time I am, and also Mritu Sarvaharashaham, and I've come to kill everybody and destroy everybody. Anyway, and so then after greeting the deities, we'll get a chance to swing on Krishna.